What's up, party people? How y'all doing? Hope y'all having a great day. It's been too long, hasn't it? It's been a couple weeks since I posted my last pod, which is blasphemy in these circles. Blasphemy, I tell ya. I see these other podcasts coming out with a pod every 2 days. I see you over there, Ryan Holiday, with your daily stoic podcast coming out with one every 24 hours. Dude, that ain't me. I try and get one out every week, 10 days or so. But I got other shit I'm doing, man. I'm writing a book. Ryan Holiday ain't writing books. Damn it. He is writing books. He's writing lots of them. But I'm going at a pace that's sustainable for me. Deep in this book project. So I promise you, whenever you look at this podcast feed and you think, damn, Kyle hasn't posted for a week or so, just know that I'm working to get you something even better. When this book comes out, it's going to be fucking awesome. And I also have been working on this copywriting agency that I started. It's called Claude. You can go to claude.agency, not .com, .agency. You can do that now. To check out some of our services. It's pretty exciting. Claude.agency. I also heard recently that an AI company came out with the same name, Claude. So I'm keeping the name until I get a letter from them. Because it sounds like work to change it. But yeah, I've been good. I've just been writing a lot, reading a lot. I do this thing where I wake up in the morning and I read, you know, 10 or 15 pages of an author I really like. And then I will, I'm getting into this journaling practice where I'll read for a little bit, just like sip a cup of coffee, read, and then I'll journal my last day. So my previous day, whatever I did the day before, I'll journal about that. And I feel like it's a good thing to do. I'm enjoying it way more than, I mean, you know, the good old gratitude journals, they're always nice. But I think that they can be pretty boring and repetitive after a little while. And it doesn't force you to actually think about just what happened and like build a fun little scene about your day or even just a moment in your day. It could be a conversation that you had and just write it down. Journals are like, you know, half a page to a page long. Takes me 5 minutes, but it's fun. It's amazing how much I forget over a 24-hour period. That's been my latest little way to start the day, optimizing those morning rituals, which work annoyingly well. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. And we're getting into springtime. The wave's been good. Been doing lots of surfing. It's been a fun spring for anyone listening in California. It's been damn good. It's just never ending little swells, mellow weather, and a good time. Finished up lobster season. There was some good lobster dives that happened, and also lots of feedback on the last episode that I posted about the proposed marine protected area issue in Santa Cruz and MPA issues statewide, which are very interesting, and it's a very interesting and nuanced issue. You know, at what point should there be fishing closures versus using all of these other tools that we have to allow for recreation and catch while maintaining this, you know, cohort of people that really do care about the ocean. So that, if you haven't listened to that podcast and you're interested in learning more about the MPA issue, the one I did with Randy Garrett just passed is pretty good. And I'm also going to try and get someone on from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, which is an organization that I really like. And they've been involved with this issue for quite some time. Just feel like they're a very science-based organization that I really like. So that's me. I know I've been rambling for a while, but as always, you can go to tierman.substack.com to get my newsletter and make sure that you're not missing any podcasts. So you'll get an email whenever a new podcast comes out. Because who doesn't need more emails, right? Am I right? Tierman.substack.com. All right. This is a podcast with a dude that I really like. I've appreciated him I've worked with him actually for a long time. Intermittently, he's helped me through some trials and tribulations during my 20s. Actually, Shems Hartwell is one of the few men's work coaches that I trust, which is what I told him as much on the podcast. There's just so much bullshit in that industry, in any industry, I suppose. There's bullshit, and there's great people within any industry too. And Shems is one of them. Specifically, we focus this podcast on men's work and some of the common pitfalls that men fall to when they become adults, when they enter middle age, how hard it is for men to give each other feedback, why that's so hard, some various techniques and tricks and things to think about for men who are suffering from depression and want to go a little bit deeper into themselves. We're all on our journey, and we're all on, you know, some kind of spiritual journey, whether or not we know it. And I think Shems is one of those guys that just drops into very real conversations very quickly. And one thing that I really like about him that we talked about quite often is the role of physical activity and exercise to move through your emotions. I think that for a long time, people have, and a lot of psychologists have thought that you can think your way out of your problems and kind of intellectualize your way out of your problems, which, yeah, sure, conversation has its place, but I've always felt like if I have a problem in my life, it is best solved through vigorous physical activity and then a conversation. And Shems talks a lot about that. We had probably my favorite part in this conversation was when he talked about Chinese medicine and the role that heat plays in mental activity. And how if you try and think your way out of problems too much, or if you're just thinking too much, which we all have a tendency to do in this, you know, knowledge economy that we're all a part of, how in Chinese medicine, they talk about that as heating up your brain and almost like overusing a gear, which can be cooled down through physical activity, cold water, movement. He talks about it much more eloquently than I do. And lastly, Shems, at the end of this podcast, he does talk about a men's group retreat that he's doing down in Nicaragua at Playa Colorado's in a couple months that I will link to in the podcast, in the link below. I think that doing, he's a surfer, he's a foiler, so he's loyal to the foil. And I think that there's something really cool about blending surf trips with more intentional men's group activities. I think that part of this is just that people be busy. We don't have all the time in the world to do a surf trip and a men's work trip. And often I think that we, you know, time off of work is a time when you can really reflect on your life if you're put in the right container for it. And I've, you know, I think that for a lot of guys, like they want to go on the surf trip, but they don't want it to just be a huge bender, which is usually what it falls into when you're going to go on a surf trip with a bunch of the boys. So doing stuff that's a bit more intentional, breath work, meditation, sharing with other men how you're doing and being supported with someone who's a very skilled facilitator like Shems seems like an awesome way to spend your time. So shameless free advertising for Shems and the project that he has going on there. Again, I will link to it in the show notes below if anyone's interested in checking that out. And That's it for me and you know, at the very least, just enjoy this podcast. Hope it gives you some food for thought, and as you're navigating your own life, sailing the wayward seas, and hope that you walk away with a bit more knowledge and a bit more smiles. I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to do more podcasts in the month ahead, I promise. And if you have guest recommendations for me, this audience does tend to have really good recos. So you can go to tierman.substack.com, or you can leave an iTunes review with a guest suggestion or any thoughts on the podcast. That's a really good, I read all of those as well on Apple Podcasts. All right. Hope you're all having a great day. Please welcome to the show, Shems Hartwell.
Kyle Tierman here. I'm in Cape Town.
I was the only journalist in northern Nigeria.
Not an adventure until you get lost in Tijuana.
If you get caught inside by a giant wave, you feel really alone.
I love the adventure of waking up and not knowing what will happen and that being my job.
I'm standing at a desert oasis right now.
A lot of tourists don't see this part of Bali.
Smiles and thumbs up. Thumbs up.
All right, my man, let's do this. Let's get off to the races. Shems Hartwell, it's so good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, Kyle, happy to drop in with you again. It has been a while.
It's been too long. What are we doing wrong in the world as men? Us men, we need to figure our shit out, man. What are we doing wrong? Help us, Shem. Help
you
us.
Know, it's funny as you say that. I feel like there's so many incredible men such as yourself and those of us who are trying to do our best. And then we have some super poor leadership and some incredible power struggles all over the world, right? Like we're seeing as wars go on in our political environment. And yet that there's average guys like you and I who are doing our best to be good men and walk the walk and be in integrity and live in a way. But it's such a dance when we live in a world with so much tension and so much polarity of people jumping into certain roles and kind of believing and getting fixed about their political viewpoint or their COVID viewpoint or their war viewpoint and not really having a lot of capacity to truly hear and try to empathize and understand with others. To me, that's like what we're doing wrong, if anything.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of flattening of perspectives where we're in, you know, in certain cultures these days within America, where even the word masculinity has become a dirty word, you know, and there are a lot of men who don't really know how to be and feel like healthy and in their bodies. And it's like anytime, you know, they want to go hunting or something, they're seen as a horrible person or, and it's like, I think that there is a time right now where we need to be holding a lot more nuance and complexity for what manhood means. And I think it's really hard, you know, especially with social media. I didn't suffer the full brunt of this, but I think that Gen Z is very much more where you're seeing a lot of psychological issues where young boys are afraid to try new things. They're afraid to experiment. They're afraid to fail because we live in this hypercritical culture now where everything that you do is going to be misinterpreted and the entire tribe could come back at you with teeth out. So I think that there is a lot of room for us to figure out how to maintain stability amidst this new chaos that has become normal.
Yeah, Kyle, I appreciate you naming that. And right along with that, social media is that there's so much projection of people putting out the best of themselves, whether that's like as a weightlifter or a surfer or some realm. And then, like you said, there's so much hesitancy to fail or not be at a high level of something because we're witnessing all these high levels that we can see in a scroll of people who seem to apparently have it together when most of them don't. Most people have their shadows, their struggles, their reality. I really appreciate you naming that part where folks are nervous to take a risk or go outside their comfort zone, men especially, because of ridicule, because of judgment, because of like, yeah, if you're not vegan or if you are vegan, whatever it is.
You can't do it right. You can't do it. I was using hunting as the example, but it's literally everything. You can't do it right. I think that has real psychological repercussions because we're all, you know, life is this growth trajectory, and there are these various stepping stones that we need to make, I think, in order to maintain psychological health, right? If you're the same person at 40 as you were at 20, you ain't doing too well, but there are a lot of incentives in place now to just continue to be that person. And I think it causes a lot of pain, not just for men and women, but I'm just, you know, speaking from the place I have some experience in.
Yeah, especially when we talk about what nourishes us, because we have these, you know, cultural beliefs around alcohol being nourishment, like partying on the weekend, which I think anybody who's done that long enough started realizing the price for that's heavy, you know, whether that's like sleep or brain cells or capacity. And we don't have a lot of ways. This is why I like men's work, actually, is there's this way of getting together and getting real and talking about where we're struggling, you know, where we might not meeting the mark, but also being willing to, like what you said a little earlier, is take risks to not be good at something, take risks to like be able to accept and be okay with where we are stumbling, with where we're struggling, with where like our relationship's challenging and we're not feeling the love flow, or where our work sucks and we're at the grind and we can't afford a house right now in the town we live in, which is true for so many people, right? That stuff's real. And where do you have a place to digest that or share about that or just come to peace with it on some level, you know? And it's a hard time in that sense, especially when there is so much media in front of us that kind of shows the end of the rainbow on some level. If you just do A, B, and C or D, or if you work hard enough, you've got these four habits, maybe you'll be successful enough to do this thing. And I think we kind of know that that's kind of a narrow path.
Yeah. Yeah, I also think that even just the term men's work can turn a lot of guys off, because I think that they're at the same time as it can be hard to show your emotions as a man, there is also a commodification of vulnerability that we've seen through social media and people, you know, guys who are like, I'm so fucking vulnerable. Buy my supplements now. You know, there's always an exit through the gift shop with these characters, but it is ultimately performance. You know, you are performing your vulnerability and sharing so much of yourself publicly that all of a sudden the vulnerability turns into a flex in a weird way. And I think a lot of guys are like, I don't want to be part of any of that, right? Mm-hmm. But then on the opposite side of that spectrum is dudes who just can't share any of their feelings or talk about any hardships, and you know, ultimately just kind of ossifies the soul.
Yeah, I appreciate your humor always. Got me laughing good, and it's so accurate. Like things are being sold often.
Dude, there's always a supplement with a high markup price at the end of that freaking great vulnerability rant on social media.
You got it. And then there's just so much, even right now with, you know, what I might call men's work is in kind of a boom right now in some sense, because of like, I work with the Sacred Sons Brothers and facilitate with them, and they've been really good at using media to highlight some of the beautiful things about, and they've gotten diversity in it. They've got age diversity. They've got ethnic diversity. They've got a lot of cool movement there going on. And so it has this allure, like Burning Man a little bit, you know, there's this like, that looks really cool. Mm-hmm. And even then we're not choosing from the right place. You know, sometimes what we're doing, it's like, if we're doing it cause I want to be cool, or I'm going to miss out if I don't do this thing, versus I need an environment where I'm getting so real with people, and I've got some people giving me feedback and a space where there's a connection happening. That's, to me, that's what it's all about. Whether it's men's work or women's work or co-ed work, it's, we need environments where we reconnect and get real. And there isn't all that judgment, like you named, of like, whether you have long hair or eat meat or hunt or whatever your passion is or what you make money doing, like that stuff falls away. And there's this person to person, you know, heart to heart, being to being realness that creates an environment where I really believe it's a form of nourishment that we're not getting enough of that gets exchanged.
I've known you for a few years now, and I trust you completely. I'm happy also to, you know, get into a little mini session with you on this podcast, just to kind of talk about the work that you do. And you are one of the few, to be perfectly honest, you're one of the few coaches that I would be willing to have on this podcast, because I just trust the place that you're coming from so much. And I have this experience with you. And one thing I wanted to get your perspective on is along the lines of this boom in men's work, this boom in therapy. Simultaneously, I think that there can be a very unhealthy and badly incentivized view of constantly needing to do the work. And people start to have their very identities seated in being in progress and constantly working, and, you know, relationships where all of a sudden it's like every weeknight we talk about the relationship, and it's this really hard thing. It's a very Protestant ethic, really. That's, I think, where a lot of this comes back to, is that it always needs to be work, and we can't ever just arrive at being okay with ourselves. And I think that coaches and therapists and this whole world has a lot of really bad incentives to keep people on a kind of therapy subscription and point out problems that they have in their life, maybe anxiety, depression, and then hyper fixate on those problems. And I don't know that anyone's doing it knowingly, but all of a sudden those problems start to become bigger parts of the person's identity. And they build a whole story around, like, well, I'm this depressed person, and it happened because of childhood and my dad, and and it outsizes their problems to the point where they start to fetishize these weaknesses and these pain points, rather than just do ultimately, I think, like what past generations have done, where they're just like, well, this is just part of life. It's just a part of the thing. And now I'm going to go surf and focus on the good. And I see that a lot. And I think that, again, the reason that I want to talk to you about it is because I think that you come from a really great place, and you would be willing to tell people, you know, I might not be the right guy for you. You might not need to see me anymore. But I see a lot of coaches that maybe don't have that kind of wisdom. And I just wanted to have you speak to that aspect of it. And if you see this at all, because you're more deeply in it than I am.
Yeah, Kyle, I appreciate you highlighting this. I think it's if I were to peel that back to the deeper part of that, that's very Western culture related to, is we have kind of our authority and our self-worth and even our security put outside of ourselves, whether that's like what your job is, how much money you have, how beautiful your partner is, you know, how successful you are, how good of something you are. And we outsource so many things that we want the world to see in us. And I think it connects to what you're speaking to, is that even if I have a personality glitch where I struggle and I suffer, and it's part of the matrix of, like you said, childhood life, most of us, I think, when you've been on a path long enough, you realize those things don't massively change. We relate better with them, more lovingly, more acceptingly, more patience, more tolerance, more ability to navigate those parts in ourselves where we can be selfish, we can be angry, we can have these things. We learn to make friends with that and kind of sober ourselves up instead of take it down the rapids by it. And so I appreciate you name a piece too, that there is sometimes these hooks that, like a therapist and even like teachers and a lot of even the guru realm too, hooks into like where people are suffering. And then sometimes, like you, I think what you're naming is that sometimes they push that button too much and think that's where the growth is. And in my experience, I think the real growth is, where am I successful and thriving and I'm okay? It's kind of like if I dislocate my shoulder, the rest of my body is great. if I put all my attention on my dislocated shoulder and I'm worried about it and stressed and wondering if I'll be able to paddle again, I lose connection to all the things that are functioning. And I think you're speaking that piece too around whether it's in relationship or in our personal journey, we do have to really be connected to where we're successful, where we're plugged in, where we're coming from a good place in our heart. And then from that place, shine light and shine attention on the kinks, the quirks, the challenges, the personality stuff that we come in with or we've learned from our culture and from our family. And I think that interface between those two is so important because we all have an inner critic too, you know, something in us that criticizes outwardly and inwardly. And I think a lot of our work is learning to relate with that inner critic rather than believing it and listening to it and letting that be kind of a mechanism that perpetuates a bit of a trauma vortex, mm-hmm. you know, like staying in, which I think is what you're describing a little bit, is kind of staying in this, like, I'm never going to be enough, or like, no matter how much work I do, or maybe I need to do this program now because I did all these other ones, when all you really need to do is be able to sit with yourself and be more deeply accepting alone in the woods, like a rite of passage, right? Mm-hmm. You know, out and be out hunting and sit still. And can I relax and sit still, even if I don't like all parts of me?
Right.
You know, can I be with that?
Right. So do you see that? I think that was very well put. And do you see this thing where gurus or teachers, like they identify, let's say, depression, like that's something just personally that I've dealt with for most of my life, just bouts of depression. And it has been that, mostly that experience of not alleviating it completely, but just finding tools to deal with it and then not focusing my attention on it too much, you know, like I do think that there is something to the fact that really you can only focus your attention on one thing at a time, you know, so just putting your energy on something else, I've found and trying to find something that's more likable in me and qualities that I do appreciate about myself doesn't outsize it to the point where I am walking around all of a sudden like I'm a depressed person. Mm-hmm. But I have felt, man, in the past, I've seen some of those potholes that you can get stuck in, mm-hmm. especially as there's this the fetishization of just commodifying your vulnerability. And all of a sudden you talk about this thing that you're dealing with publicly and you get praise for the vulnerability, like you completed something successful, right? Like, so there's this weird, like, status shift that can happen by being like, well, I'm really depressed. And then people are like, congrats on doing that, which like feeds into this thing in such an unhealthy way. I mean, what would you say to someone who is finding that they are unknowingly fetishizing or commodifying some ailment that they have?
Well, I think I would begin with wanting to understand what some of their stories and, you know, the way that we're perceiving themselves around, let's say, depression or something. I'd want a little understand, like, what's the repeating pattern inside themselves, the story they're telling themselves about themselves? Mm-hmm. You know, if it were, you know, you know, when you go in a pothole, like you said, and you're in a cycle where like things are a little stressful and maybe something's up, you start to have thoughts about yourself, about where you should be, about what should be different. So to me, that'd be an entry point of like, what's that pattern? And then it's also a little bit of like, what if that's really true? And what if that are you actually amplifying and making bigger than it needs to be? And then what's true beyond that? What's true about like who you really are beyond that? Because it's kind of similar to AA. I don't really like aspects of like, I'm an alcoholic and I'm going to be that way forever. Like I agree with the identification of I have an issue with alcohol and it has a grip on me and it's really hard. And when I get near it, there's all this gravitational pull. I don't like the like entering the room and being like, I'm depressed. I'm an alcoholic and this is how it is for me. And I'm in this group because I like to say like, there's a tendency in me that has this relationship with depression that can actually be taken by depression and can feel stormy weather for weeks or months. And when I get in that, it's really hard to get out of it. I'm not identifying that's me. that's something that's happening because of my experience of interfacing with this crazy world and what I've learned and what I've inherited and even what I carry from my family ancestry. Because a lot of us are carrying, you know, the hurts and pains and losses and hardships and hell that's happened in the past that's been passed on through the family lineage on some level. And we're on the forefront or the front line of that. So the more that we are like opening and paying attention and having a little more breathing room to check in and not just survive and work in a cane field, you know, in some ways that stuff bubbles up. And then we have this opportunity to start to digest it, literally like food that didn't get digested. So I think of that as depression too, is there may be like deep emotional stuff that we've had from our own journey, but also that we carry from our family that literally just has to have a safe space to move and be cleared. And sometimes like hunting will do that, or surfing will do that, or taking a run will do that, or literally having ways of being with our experience more in totality. And that's what I would go to with anybody that's working, is the totality of you of like, yeah, there's moments when I get taken and it's heavy and I got thoughts or negative. There's moments when I'm so excited about life and lit and passionate and writing and in my creativity. And what's the interface between those two, so we don't get caught in one and try to avoid this one by racing to this one, but learn that there's a bridge between those, and they both have their place. That's kind of how I would start that entry into it.
Yeah. One thing I just wanted to underscore that you said was, rather than saying I am depressed, say it, there's a tendency in me for depression.
Yeah.
That I think resizes it. So it's not your entire personality. It's just this one thing. It's like, you're not a knee injury. You know, I've had some knee issues and I do this physical therapy to keep my knee healthy.
Exactly. It's a huge part, because we, you know, one of the challenges in relationship, in why like criticism and contempt and stonewalling and these things, because what happens is a person gets really angry and we don't like their behavior. We make the person wrong rather than the behavior. So similarly in ourselves, if I have a behavior that I don't like, where I get impatient about something, and it's like, that's not me. That's when the right environments happened, where that's louder than usual there. And I can learn to relate with that better, so that doesn't last as long, or so that I make friends with it, so it doesn't have as much impact on others. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. Like, depression can be similar. If you're in a relationship and you're depressed and your partner's like, gosh, you're not available, you don't want to connect with me, you're hiding out, like you don't talk to me, you're just in your own little world. Well, you're going to want to go like, gosh, okay, how do I connect with her in my depression? How do I not have my depression isolate me, but how do I use this experience of depression to also leverage my connection with my partner? So I'm sharing that experience and it actually lightens it, or it doesn't isolate me, which is what men do a lot. We tend to like try to isolate and grin and bear on our own. Or when we do share it, we do it from like wanting sympathy, or we feel like a victim, or like you're saying in this, like, we want to get off on the fact that I was vulnerable, or I'm like there's a little getting off on it a little bit, rather than just like, God, this happened. Here it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Regarding men's groups, I do want to talk a bit about, I've never done any of these, but I do see the value of them. I do go on hunting trips with guys, and I go on backpacking trips with guys, and it is amazing. You almost don't, I mean, not to you know, tell people they shouldn't check out your men's work, but you almost don't need a facilitator there sometimes if you just get out into nature around. It's almost like the fireplace is a facilitator, where you just have three or four guys out in nature for a few nights, and then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, I've been going through this. It wants to come out. What has been your draw to this aspect of coaching and actually getting people together rather than just doing one-on-one calls? What do you think can be done in that setting that can't be done in your one-on-one coaching?
I appreciate him. Similar to hunting in some sense, when you get yourself into an environment, let's just say there's four of you that are out on a hunt in way into the night, and you require all this attunement with each other, right? There's these things that turn on in us collectively actively in the listening and the paying attention and the connection. But there's a lot at stake when you're hunting. Like you have to be switched on. You're not just getting drunk and shooting guns, right? You're actually in a place where
you can,
and you probably aren't doing that in the field, but maybe. what I appreciate about my experience of what we could call men's work is that what often happens is that if one guy is really starting to share about how his marriage is breaking down, he's attracted to other women, he's really struggling with how to connect with his wife and being unfulfilled in the relationship and work, and he's starting to open up his box, right? And you've got a handful of men that are really listening, and it's touching places often in multiple of us too that resonate with that or have some sense of that too. And what I appreciate about men's work is it's not about like trying to fix things. It's having a space where there's a quality of energy that's catalytic. Just like being out in nature, there's a catalytic energy to being outside in the wind, in the cold, in the rain, in the hunt, in the energy that turns something on in us that's a little more primal, like sitting around the fire and getting real. And if we're not just talking about sports, we're not just talking about like complaining about politics and jobs, we're actually talking about what's real for us and having prompts to drop in and hear that, but we're also cultivating the ability to listen with curiosity, to try to understand what's happening for someone. We're building a capacity to really be with conflict. We're building a capacity to be with suffering and challenges and stress, which gives us more tolerance and also more capacity to be with like a parent who's dying, to be with a boss who's unloading. It gives us more bandwidth in some ways to handle the chaos of our world and not shut down and react. Like imagine we're walking down the street in Santa Cruz and there's like some guy just hitting his wife and like totally flipping. Like we have these primal senses to stop that. If we've been doing men's work and we've been in an environment where we've been dropping and getting real, we may have a better response to that than just like grabbing him by the neck and ripping him off. We might walk up and be like, hey, what's going on? Is there a weak? We might meet that and interface with that in a way that would create better results so he doesn't pull out a gun and shoot you. You know, like, so think of it as that it's like we're cultivating the skills we don't have, kind of like we would in training to fight. We're cultivating ways of interfacing, being and holding space and getting real and dropping in and listening that give us more capacity to handle when the heat goes up in other aspects of our lives, or when like everything seems like it's crashing and we feel like we're more resourced to be okay to face like my wife saying, I want a divorce, or my boss saying, you're done. And like, sometimes we would just completely shut down and freak out and go to the bar and get drunk. If you've been doing some deeper work, you may have better ways of resourcing and checking in and listening and reaching out to talk with somebody rather than doing something that wouldn't support you.
Yeah. It's the key to life is finding that space between stimulus and response, right? Like it solves 98% of your problems. Which is why I think, you know, all those things that you've talked about in the physical, right, help with that, that muscle between stimulus and response, right? If we've slept shitty and we haven't exercised, there are these default responses that we're going to have to girlfriends, to bosses, and the higher stakes your life gets, the more important those responses become, right?
Yeah.
If you're running a company and you flip out, all of a sudden that has this ripple effect through the entire company, which is why, you know, I mean, like our mutual friend Shane Heath is one of the best at that. You know, he's extremely good at just hearing some fucked up news and taking a breath and not responding. I mean, it's really inspiring to me. Just over the years, watching him do his little like gorilla grunts when he's heard, you know, some massive news, and then he just like comes back with a very thoughtful response. And tone is part of that too, right? I think learning, becoming more aware of our tone. So on these groups, do you offer feedback to guys too? Because that, you know, that's another thing that I wanted to talk to you about is just how infrequently guys give each other feedback. Unless they're explicitly asking for it. And there are these things that we do that we're pretty unaware of that ultimately like result in the friends we have, the jobs we get, the way we end up in life. Like, as an example, my lovely girlfriend just told me this recently. I had no idea. She goes, did you know that sometimes if we're in a group conversation and someone starts talking, like they got it just like a second before you, but you have something that you want to say, you will overpower them and just launch into your next thing that you wanted to say. And I'm like, I had no idea that you said that, but now that you do, I can totally see that I do that.
Yeah, that's a good example too.
If it wasn't for her, you know, I'd be screwed.
You know, my favorite thing about group work is it's an accelerant of learning. When giving feedback, to me, the most important thing is that you want that person to know that the reason you're giving feedback is because you value them and you want to go deeper, or because you care about them. It's not because you want to challenge them or make them wrong or on some level criticize them. That's the key, is to share something that has them feel like trust in you and care from you, which is why you're saying, hey, I see this behavior. Hey, I notice this thing that happens with us. Can I share it with you? And I'm also a fan of asking permission. So making connections, saying, hey, there's something I've been seeing or experiencing when we connect or when we talk about this subject. Can I share it with you? So you're doing your best to create fertile ground for it to land. And again, like the most important part is that what's your intention of why you're sharing it? Some people share feedback because they want, I'm not saying this is conscious, but sometimes they want the other to feel less than. You know, and that's the old paradigm of the world we live in where, you know, when a couple is fighting, they're giving jabs because they want the other to hurt. And we want to do the exact opposite. I want my friend or this person to grow and have more awareness so that they're more successful in their life.
Yeah. And I think it can also be very hard to give feedback and then not bring yourself into the story. Like, well, you know, because when I do this stuff, I always try and so there is this like these kind of humble brags that can creep their way into these conversations as well. And not just ending it as concisely as it can be. I think that it can be very difficult for guys to sit in silence after making statements.
True. Like as it lands. And I do like what you're saying in the sense of when we share our own personal experience of something, if we don't share it as a brag or like has some implication that I've got this, you don't, we share it as more like, here's what my journey has been around that. That's why I even have awareness of what I'm watching and why I'm giving you feedback.
Yeah.
You know, there's this way as men that we are subtly like competition pods. I've been, you know, watching the whales a lot lately, living on Maui, and there's competition pods. They literally fight. In a lot of the shows that people see where they see the whales banging their tails, they're actually in kind of a fighting male mode, you know, over a female. And a lot of us have that kind of wired in us. And I think there's a real healthy thing to that when we do that in a way that it elevates us in sports or in challenges in certain ways that are fun. But when that's our go-to, we miss
sorry, you just broke up there. God, man, I'm okay. So, sorry, just start from the top there. Go ahead.
Yeah, feedback to me is it's an investment in a relationship, but it's also it's the intention to actually be more for somebody so that we can actually show up more fully in our lives in the world, which is beneficial to all. And that's a new way of men working together, is that we really are on the same team. And there's so many ways that things set us up into divisiveness. Like if the intention of feedback is to actually lessen divisiveness and actually be there to really help each other be sharper swords or better instruments in the world, like that intention is so valuable to me. And that's what I think good men's work is about, is helping each other basically train. You know, like we train in a dojo, or we train as fighters, or we train as surfers, or we train as athletes, and we're pushing each other and going harder, and we're doing these things. But we don't necessarily train emotionally and our capacity to handle like leadership roles or stresses or environments where things are really heavy and hard and challenging. And I think that's kind of the edge we're on together around men's work, is all of it, like training physically, training spiritually, training emotionally, and training mentally, to be able to have more capacity to face all of the chaos of our world.
Right. What do you see as the most common issues men in their 30s and 40s are facing?
You know, it's, I can kind of go in two ways with that. Let me go in one and I'll see if I'll go in the other as well. The first is, I think men get overwhelmed by the pressures of, you know, financially, work stress, the world, who we should be, like we began with a little bit, like who men think they should be in the world and all the things. And those pressures overwhelm our systems so that we basically kind of shut down or check out, whether that's like drugs, alcohol, TV, porn. We do things to numb ourselves instead of to strengthen ourselves. And I think a lot of men, or men do something like they get totally addicted to lifting weights or doing ayahuasca or training really hard, surfing or something, as an avoidance of the discomforts and pains that we're facing in a hard life in front of us. You know, and even those of us privileged to live in the West, you know, in the US in some levels, which is a privilege in the world grand scheme, there's so many shadows in our culture that undermine our trust in ourselves, our feeling confident to be who we need to be, to just let ourselves be who we are. And I think men really feel that in these times, and especially with the advent of social media and all of the like things we see that we want to be like or feel we should be like.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, I will say, just speaking personally, as my vocation as a writer, there's a lot, I think I spend too much time alone, and I feel that, and I've taken steps and am continuing to take steps to try and find those tribes in my life that I can convene with on a consistent basis. Because man, it's easy to let it slip, you know, in when you're, you know, going after your career, all of a sudden you can find, like I was finding, you know, last year I was living in a little casita alone, and I was like, I've gone two or three days without actually seeing anyone in person. I've just been on Zoom calls with, you know, clients and brands, and then I'm spending large periods of my day alone writing. And I was like, this is not good. And last year I moved into a house with two housemates. And it's been awesome. Like we work out together, we chat. Like there's something too, I think, just socially about like, well, if you can live alone, then you should, that is just wrong. And even still, like I still deal with that kind of loneliness in my work. And look at me commodifying my vulnerability, Shem. You see me?
I get so many messages
from this. but yeah, it's an easy one that we just forget about. But I think we are programmed to be in tribe, and finding quality tribes is requisite for a healthy human life.
Yeah, well said. What did you notice, Kyle, like in that cycle, like you said, when you were living alone and you could see that pattern happen, like you said, not having a lot of interface? What did you notice? Like what was your experience? Would your energy levels change? Would your sleep change? Would it be more like how your mind operates? Like what did you track?
For sure. Super busy mind. Difficult to focus. There's this weird thing that happens for me, because writing is such a mental game. I've gained a lot of facility with my mind, the way someone would who's, I mean, just like surfing, you know, the more you surf, the more you realize like, oh, what, this muscle here works like this. And then I tweak my body in this way and does that. Like I've really learned a lot about how my mind works through the process of becoming a writer. And there's this really interesting thing that happens where you sit down to write. It's really, it can be hard. Your thoughts are jumbled, can't focus on anything. And then you, maybe a whole writing session sucks. And then you get into another writing session, maybe the next day, and it's very clear. And there's this spaciousness, and you can go a few hours of writing very clear, very good stuff. And it is a form of feeling like you just meditated for 2 or 3 hours. Everything is very spacious and open, and I can, you know, go on a walk and just like notice the details of everything so precisely. And it's the best feeling in the world when I have that. I have never felt anything better than that feeling of just spaciousness and presence. But then something happens where all of a sudden that spaciousness turns into what almost feels for a second like profundity, where I think I have figured it all out. I start to have these very big thoughts like, humans act like this. Like, we're social creatures. It's so interesting how we chase status. And look at this person here. They're chasing. I start to see things in like a very, from a very grand, broad strokes perspective, which can be very fun for a little while because you feel like you understand it all. But then very quickly, those kinds of like huge thoughts start to turn on themselves. And I get depressed, and I get depressed about humanity, and I get depressed about myself, and all of that kind of understanding turns to certainty. And then it's like, well, I am a piece of shit, and I'm never going to get better at any of this. And I start to look at aspects of my life with this very broad stroke that is untrue. And then I know when that happens, it really does feel like, someone with a back injury and it's coming, and like, ooh, I feel like if I surf a little longer right now, my back's going to flare up. And then I've learned in those moments that it's like, okay, you need to go exercise, call a bunch of friends. You need to be around people and be in a physical space. And even then, sometimes it can take a day or two to then get back from that, state, which starts to feel a lot like nihilism. So that's the process. And I now, living with housemates, like, have really taken a lot of, like, I have a deep tool belt. Like, I cold plunge every morning. I meditate most mornings. I journal, like, 'cause I just realized that I'm prone to these kinds of thoughts, that I think also there is a certain gift that comes with that. Like, I think I can see things that other people can't see. I notice a lot. Ultimately, like, that's why I get hired, and is for my perspective. But with that comes like a lot of potential darkness if I'm not careful. So that's my process, that I tend to go through, and have gone through enough times now that I am getting better at catching it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate how much, you know, attunement you are to the cycle. And it's so interesting how the gift of that, like the creative gift, like you said, that can really turn you on and have you in a flow state and have you in this realm of creativity, has a shadow to it, right? Where like too much of it will, there'll be like, you can kind of slip into another state that doesn't serve you. And I so appreciate that you're knowing where that threshold is, or discovering it more and more of what keeps you in a balance point, which I think is really, it's a really good description for most of us. Cause if we wield our mind too much, from my experience, we end up suffering a lot. And if we wield our mind the right amount, we have this phenomenal tool to write, to share, to create, to do things. And fortunately, when we have social connection, healthy social connection cools the mind down, doesn't usually heat it up.
That's such an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, because I think as the mind is heat, it's a certain heat. That's why it burns up a little bit and ends up being kind of like depleting, because the mind uses so much resources of our energy, our ATP, our life force, our prana. It uses more than even digestion. Hence, like if you're studying for exam, people get really, really hungry. So it's a balance point of like knowing how to wield the capacity of your brilliance, right? Your mind to write and be in that place and utilize the perspective. And then there's a tipping point when that ends up having more of a cost, which I'm appreciating that you're noticing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's why so many writers commit suicide. You know, yeah. Like for real, you know, you look at someone like David Foster Wallace, who had such an incredible mind, and you just think like, what happened there? And there's a writer that I follow. He's a really great writer named Freddie DeBoer on Substack, who talks openly about depression. And he says that his therapist actually recommends that he not write as much. And it's such an that analogy of heat is fascinating. Tell me more about that. How did you come across this insight, and how do you think about it now? I'm really fascinated by this, selfishly, of course.
Well, you know what? I think of it in the realm of connection. Like, and you've heard me mention this before, is I believe we have these bridges of connection that we interface with the world with, right? One being our mind and our understanding and our communication. One being the heart, which is heart coherence, like heart entrainment, like a mother holding a child and their hearts go into a shared entrainment, or women being together and starting to have their moon cycles come into entrainment, you know? And then we have a core level of connection that includes sexuality, but also is very intuitive and knowing. And each one of those has energy that exchanges, but energy tends to rise and tends to get hot. And this comes a bit from my Chinese medicine background, studying martial arts and acupuncture and things like that. But too much activity in an area is heat, like inflammation, right? So too much mental activity will get too hot and it will like not work as well, right? You get these beautiful spurts of a couple hours that are really on. And then we need a balance point, like you're saying, a workout or a connection or a conversation or just literally a changing of gears so we don't burn out one gear.
Wow.
And I really think that's part of what humanity, I think, is discovering again, is the need for balance. You know, we can get too fixated on anything, whether it's like preserving one place or one thing, but then there's a tipping point of touch of all these other things. And it's everything, right? Everything's connected. And so in our own system, that's very important. And we live in a world that really magnifies mental activity. It amplifies it. It like everything feeds it, you know? And even what is AI? AI is like massive mental activity outsourced, right?
Yeah.
And we value that so amazingly for it to solve problems and equations. And it has its place and it has its value. But I think we also realize that a lot of like understanding happens at much deeper levels that are more experiential and knowing and are embodied experiences. And so when we're not embodied enough, we get hot-headed and then we're disconnected from more of our whole being intelligence, which is very much also heart, very much also kind of like a gut primal enteric nervous system knowing. So those who are like really good at something, you've trained in it long enough, whether that's like running or surfing or snowboarding or biking, you've done it enough where your mind's not involved anymore and you're following the impulses of your body's skill with it, right? To the point where you could just go, you know, dropping into a big set wave. You're not thinking about what you're going to do. You're following all the experiential impulses of your muscles and body and entrainment that just flow with that. That's not thought. The thought gets in the way.
Right.
And writing, I'm sure, is similar for you too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it really is, as you say, like finding this middle ground of how much thinking is healthy versus how much thinking is too much thinking. And how it the right amount is really one of the best feelings I've ever experienced. But how too much of that can start to spiral really quickly and also really mess with sleep. I mean, I think that the my relationship with sleep, as I've become a professional writer, has changed so dramatically because it is really the greatest tool for me is to have a good night's sleep and wake up refreshed. And if I start to write too, what's the word I'm looking for? Just frantically or obsessively late into the night, it's really difficult for me to sleep because it really does. It feels like the gears are still running in my brain. And it's not allowing it to turn off. And I'll have certain weeks where like I have great productivity, but it feels like I was asleep for maybe 4 hours and it ultimately ends up in some crazy crash. So learning how to ramp up and ramp down those heat cycles is something that I'm still learning quite a bit about.
Yeah, that's a great description. And I appreciate you know that because you know what it's like when the mind gets a little bit overactive, or even you could even call it manic a little bit, even though it's working for you,
totally.
Right? Where it's going and, and you're not cooling the engine down enough to allow your system to integrate all that's moving through you. It's true with sexuality too, right? If you flip that to the other switch all the way down, when it's too hot sexually, it's very exhausting. It's very burning out of our system.
Mm.
And to me, it's always looking for that balance point and connection and community and collaborating and having people that we really enjoy being in their presence of, not just conversation, the quality of being together. There's a nutrient in that helps us enter more of a relaxed being state, just like we relax in nature. And humanity, all of us, we need that a lot more. You know, go into less mind and more just acceptance and being and sharing food or doing what needs to be done around a place. And I think our culture has this pace. I'm clipping my fingers because this culture has this pace that doesn't value that as much as it could. And I think that's what we're trying to change gears with men's work and stuff, is valuing being together in a way that we sync up like instruments that are in tune, that play well together. And the analogy of like playing music alone is only good so far. And then you start sharing music, it gets really good, right?
Yeah. I appreciate what you said about not just talking, but just the quality of being together. I think about just how bad most of us are at that. Like when you are having a day where you're like, oh man, I really just need to connect with a homie, like how often the conversation immediately turns to like, so what have you been up to? What, like it immediately goes to this accomplishment and where you have to kind of be like, yeah, well, I've been doing this, I've been doing that, like da da da. Like there, it really is. Conversations very often the denominator of it is achievement, like what have you been achieving, and that's what we call just hanging out. I wanted to ask you, but some guys are really good at it, you know, like yourself. I would imagine that you're on a lot of guys short list of people that to call to just reconnect. You did mention that just being together and like hanging is different than using the mental activity of heat. Why do you say that? Because at first glance, I would think like, well, you're still talking, you're still using, you know, the verbal parts of your brain. Conversations can be stimulating. Mm-hmm. How would you distinguish those two? Is it just longer pauses?
Well, it might be more just being in a sense of easefulness together, like not having any form of anxiety about, should I say something here? Self-doubt, like, I wonder what he wants to hear from me. Like all of that is like a toxic heat. You know, when we're anxious in a group and we feel like we have to perform, rather than when you're with a good bro and you guys are, let's just say, walking Westcliff, you know, there's just like, we're enjoying the air, the breeze, we're seeing things, we're seeing like that. And there's a more of a light conversation of exchange. That's the talking is equal to the being together.
Mm-hmm.
The talking is, there's more, actually, another way I think saying it is there's more exchange than just your words.
Mm.
And I think this is really important because this is one of the things I'm guiding couples to do a lot, is because during their quality time, they think they have to talk about everything. But, you know, when you live with somebody and you're doing life together, it's almost like you already have too much business, whether that's like taxes or the kids. And what quality time actually is just sitting together and holding hands and breathing and not talking and actually doing something more intimate. That can be sexual, that can be connecting, but, or taking a walk together where there isn't a lot of words exchanged, but there's an enjoyment of just sharing that quality of spaciousness and connection together. That's super important because when we are overly mentally active, actually, a connection with somebody can be more draining than nourishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for, and I see this as men's work. I'm not looking to like have men come so they get their world rocked, and like, I'm going to men come so they feel like their batteries get recharged by the quality of being together and the quality of the conversations. And like you said, the prompt of like what we're doing together isn't like, what have you achieved this year? How much money do you make? And all that stuff. It's the prompt is what excites you right now? What, you know, the prompt is these other prompts that bring us into a state that's very at ease and relaxed and comfortable. So there's just a very, I want to say like playful / real quality of being together. That's super good.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so important these days. That is so important these days. What do you recommend as good questions guys can ask each other when reconnecting and hanging out together?
That's a great question.
If not, you know, yeah. What are you achieving? Are you still, yeah, are you yeah. still
what are the ready? Other, what are the other prompts or entry points that kind of create a different quality of conversation, right? That's what we're thinking of a little bit. It's like, what creates more of a quality of conversation that drops us in? And, you know, how are you is such a loose thing, right? And it has kind of an auto response.
Yeah.
And I like to say, like, what's another way of asking how someone is that has them give an answer that's alive in that moment? Like, hey, what's happening for you? And you're in like right now in your life, what excites you? What's lighting you up? What makes you the most happy about your life right now?
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Or like, what would you say is something that like is a growth edge you're on right now that's challenging you?
Ooh, that's good. That's good. I like that. Yeah, because I think that if you are friends, you can ask those kinds of questions, and it really does cut through the bullshit pretty fast. And I would also add to that to ask a good follow up question after that. Even if it's just tell me more about that. What do you mean by that? Like it pretty often, I feel like the first answer for guys and maybe just humans generally, is like testing the waters of like, okay, I'm going to share a little bit here. And then is that okay to share? So then you ask a follow-up and then all of a sudden they're like, well, for real though, da 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 da.
Yeah, you got, I like it. There's an entry connection and then a deeper one right afterwards.
Yeah.
And you know, Kyle, the most challenging thing I invite couples to do, or I invite, you know, friends to do is to ask something that actually lead. Well, another way to say is lead with something about how it feels to be in the presence of this friend. You know, whenever I see you, I notice here's what I like about being with you. Here's how it feels in me when we get together and take a walk. I notice I start getting more excited about, you know, sharing with you about what's lighting up about my work and writing, or I particularly like to connect with you about writing, or I particularly like that we often talk about surfing, or that we often talk about hunting. Like that's another entry point, I think, is like, what do you like and appreciate about this person that you could remind them about?
Yeah.
That's a more vulnerable entry point that I really like.
It's so funny how often we need to be reminded of the good in us. Yeah. It's just that's kind of what this whole conversation is about, right? It's like if you're prone to depression, to just not make it be your entire life, not forget about all the good in you. You know, if you're with a friend, like a big part of it is just to remind them of the good in them. Because it's so easy to forget. It's so easy to forget our good qualities. And it takes so much reinforcement from other people and from ourselves too. I think that the practice of just journaling can be immensely powerful in helping to grow those qualities of our identity that we want to grow with little pieces of evidence, right? It's almost like our identities need evidence. And by me saying, Shems, you ask great questions and you are such a complete speaker. You know, whenever I ask you a question on a podcast, you just wrap it up very nicely. Like, you may forget that about yourself, right? And so often, like, we forget these things about ourselves. And it just is this constant, like, need multiple times a day. It's almost like praying. Like, I feel like Muslims have that figured out. Like, 5 times a day of pausing to reflect is, like, the right amount that we need. Like, that is however you want to do it, but 5 times a day, you got to reinforce some good in yourself just to continue to get by. And when we do find ourselves, you know, above the line, I think that we can do really amazing things, but a lot of it is about figuring out what we need to prime the engine so that we can really go and be at our best.
Man, I love that. And, you know, it makes me think of being in Morocco and, you know, those calls to prayer go on. And I was thinking, what if people did a quick prayer to God, but they also connected with somebody, like turned around and just like had a really good heart to heart with somebody, you know, that just like that 5 times a day that you're actually making a genuine connection that feels really good, or you're interfacing with somebody you normally wouldn't interface with, you know, because they have a different belief system or something. And I like those kind of challenges that where we're stretching ourselves out of our comfort and familiar and out of the cultural familiar, and allowing ourselves to have some more entry points into connection that feel good. And I think I would add that to everything you just highlighted that we've been talking about, is what are we doing that uniquely has us interface with the world in new ways that stretch us open?
Yeah. Ooh, that's good. Yeah. Yeah, it takes that novelty and it takes that choice to go about it a little bit differently so that we don't get stuck in ruts. But I think that's what everyone's looking for. And I appreciate that you're constantly a beacon for showing people that you can do things differently. I really think that a lot of your work could be summed up with that offering. And it's really cool because humans are so neuroplastic when we choose to be.
Thank you. And yeah, I do believe it's like, what else is possible? I mean, I think one of the biggest gifts that humans have is creativity. Is that, you know, of all the beings on the planet, we have this capacity for creativity, whether it's writing, whether it's artwork, whether it's what we do just in how we connect with people and how we are. And I feel like that's what goes dormant a little bit when social media is too loud or when we feel like we have to fit into a certain box. And I do like, what's possible here and what could I bring in that allows a different result to happen?
Yeah. Yeah. It could just be a different route home from work.
Yeah. There's the truth to that. Like all that neuroplasticity and change. And I'm with you in the sense of the mornings, I like to do a cold plunge and throw some kettlebells if I'm not surfing and that rhythm, but I also like to shift it up and make sure I don't get addicted to like the everyday cold plunge and have to have it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just an interesting thing. Like we can kind of lock into anything, whether it's like, I have to do my breath work or my yoga practice every morning. It's like, huh, well, if I'm not doing that, like what's something different that brings a fresh energy that also makes me appreciate my other practice even more.
Yeah. Shems, I know you got to roll soon. I think you just delivered enough knowledge for me to chew on it for about a year. I'm so happy where this conversation led. Anything you want to leave the audience with? I know this was kind of an episode for the gentleman out there. That was the intention of this one. But yeah, anything you want to say to some of the dudes out there listening? Any parting words of wisdom? And I know that you're also doing a retreat, which I want you to be able to plug if anyone wants to take the next step and hang with you in person.
Sure. Well, thanks, Kyle, for, you know, having me here and being able to drop in with you. And for any of my, you know, fellow brothers out there, I'd say that if we could lead with acceptance more, like how we're showing up, what's going on ourselves, or accepting others, and not from a place of like immediately having some reactivity to somebody's viewpoint or somebody's what they appear to be presenting to us. If we lead with acceptance, it's fun to discover what happens. If like I accept, no matter like where somebody comes from in the world and what their religious background is, if I meet them with acceptance, what opens up? Like, I just want to, like, as a practice, as a way to play in the world of like, what if I, if my first engagement with the next person I engage with was like, how fully could I accept who this person is, where they may have come from, what they might believe, and what happens differently in me and what happens differently in the interaction. So that could be a cool thing to play with that I find is really juicy. And the other thing is I'm really excited. I just recorded this this course for the Sacred Sons. That's a relational skills course for men on their own or for men to do with their partners. It's going to be live pretty soon as like an evergreen product that guys can buy and download and do together as a practice video series, like an 8-week. It's pretty thorough. It's pretty awesome. I think it's one of the best works I've created so far and was a really good stretch and challenge for me to do. I mean, the amount of self-criticism and judgment of watching myself on video as I was doing it and editing it with my videographer, but I'm really happy with the final result. And so that's going to be something cool that like, if guys are inspired to that, it'll probably be live in a couple of weeks or so to check out. And you can probably go to my Instagram. And I have this surfing/men's retreat in Nicaragua in mid-May that I'm so excited about, combining, you know, being at Colorado's with offshore wind and waves. And for guys who are skilled surfers or not, there's a couple other surf spots options. But to do some epic surf time, but also to have this tight container of doing men's work and eating good food and having an awesome experience together. I just want to give an invitation to any brothers who might feel the call for that kind of experience.
Ooh, that's awesome, man. I want to go. I do think that there is, there's something so cool about not having your vacation just be a kind of surfing your brains out and not thinking about yourself, you know, because that time is limited, you know, when we take our, mm-hmm. when we take time off of work, you know, we might only get one of those a year. And to be able to come back from an experience, you know, I think that a lot of guys do take their surf trips and it does a lot for them. Yeah, I had the chance to take a Mentawai trip about a year ago and with guys, and like we're doing breathwork sessions every day, like on the boat. And it enriched the trip so much to be able to do that and then go out and get good waves. I think that there is really something to combining those two modalities. So I'm happy you're doing it.
That's it, brother. We're going to do breath work, cold plunges, but you're so right. Guys will come home having like a brotherhood of really deep men they can stay connected to that'll be deep, really meaningful. So that's the plan, for it to be a nice mix of the best of both worlds.
Shems Hartwell, so great connecting, man.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it, brother. Great to see you and be with you here.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
That's our show. If you enjoyed it, you can give it a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps boost ratings and allows me to get hard-to-get guests on the show. You can also head over to tierman.substack.com to get my weekly newsletter. It's where you can weigh in on specific episodes, recommend new guests, talk to me directly in the comments. It's all over at tierman.substack.com. Thanks so much for listening. Get out in the water, whatever body of water you're closest to, lake, river, bathtub, ocean. Promise you'll make your day better. See you soon.